Freight Efficiency with NACFI's Mike Roth and Friends.
Here in episode 30, we're joined by Chris Nord. He's Vice President of Commercial Development at Workhorse Group Incorporated. We talk about how he applied lessons learned at Ryder to his work now at Workhorse, the importance of the voice of the customer in product development, the need for purpose-built vehicles in the last mile delivery segment, why some fleets are early adopters of technology, and what we can learn from them. He also has concerns about how the lack of electricians will impact the EV infrastructure build-out. Today we have joining us Chris Nord. He's the Vice President of Commercial Development at Workhorse Group Incorporated. Hello, Chris. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Mike. How you doing? Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great catching up. We go back a bit. So I always ask my guests, because this is, you know, Freight Efficiency with Mike Roth and Friends. So do you remember how we met and became friends? Is it kind of like how and when?
Yeah. I don't remember exactly what conference it was because I was on such a tour at the time when I was working for Scott Perry over at Ryder. And Scott was very involved in the organization together with you. And he introduced us, and it was, you know, we hit it off right away. We're from the same industry, obviously, right? And just have so much in common. It's great that we kept that relationship going for so long.
Let's do a little inside NACFI here. Before you met me, what did Scott say about the organization?
Well, Scott was always a huge proponent of NACFI and the Run on Less efforts that you were doing. All of the efforts in going into detail around each different technology and how much fuel efficiency it got and how much it cost and what was the ROI. You guys have really done a lot of great work over the years.
Yeah, thanks. It's, you know, it's all about trying to help the industry, you know, move forward, you know, have confidence in the things that are working for, you know, in individual segments. And Chris, we'll probably get into that because it's so important to break up medium and heavy trucks into, you know, segments and then, you know, configurations within the segments. And, you know, as Ryder and now Workhorse, you know, operating in a good portion of the market, all that's really important. So yeah, let's get, you know, what's it been like? I mean, moving from Ryder system to Workhorse. I mean, we, you know, these job changes, I'm sure are sometimes tough, but you know, it's kind of within a part of the segment of the market, just moving from one company to next. So how's it been?
I honestly, I couldn't be happier. I really like the team that I'm working with here, but I recognize that there's no way I could be where I'm at and doing the things that I'm doing without everything that I learned at Ryder. It was just such an incredible school and so many incredible people that taught me everything that I know today. And so obviously there's a ton of gratitude that I have for Ryder and everything that I learned there. And now I get to apply it in such an incredibly rapid way. There's no doors. There's no holds. It's really just about how quickly can we get to the vision that we painted. And what are the resources that you need and why haven't you already gotten there, Chris? So go faster.
Yeah. Real quickly before we move into Workhorse, because I really want to spend a majority of our time there. I do think Ryder and organizations and companies in that leasing space, you know, in many ways you're a truck OEM. I mean, you know, those companies configure specs for customers, you know, in the business model. So, you know, it's kind of unique globally that we have that in the United States and Canada where, you know, those organizations sometimes, you know, are a fleet because you operate trucks, but they're also a lot of an OEM in really deeply understanding the components that need to be put on the configurations for each of the applications and, you know, a little bit about all the data around how they live over time, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I can see how that's a really good learning for a lot of people in our industry.
Yeah, and I'll take that one step further. It's sort of this dual view, right? Like you have that view into the OEM space and all the different components like you just laid out, but then you kind of turn around and you view the customer. And I've never seen any organization that understands the customer better in such a broad spectrum of different kinds of customers than these leasing organizations like Ryder. And that's really, so important. I mean, we talk about voice of the customer all the time here when we're talking about, okay, what's the next product we're going to develop? Like, are we going into the linen industry? If so, who's the right customer to talk to within that segment? What about the baking industry, and who's the perfect customer to listen to and build a vehicle for that industry? And so that same kind of rigor around voice of customer that I learned at Ryder, I'm trying to apply here. And they're really receptive, and they have a few examples of customers that they've really gotten to know incredibly well, and built products after their needs.
That's fantastic. So, so tell us a little bit about Workhorse, kind of its history, and you know, where, you know, and even all the way up to the current products and even projects that you have right now.
Yeah, sure. So Workhorse is a very well-established brand going back decades. It used to be owned by Navistar before it was owned by us, and then at some point in the past, I believe it was even owned by GM. So certainly a well-established brand. And it was the typical kind of step van chassis. At one point, Workhorse under Navistar was producing the great majority of UPS's step van products that then would, you know, usually be shipped to a Morgan Olson for having a body put onto it. So AMP Electric, which was the original founders of the electric side of this business, had a company called AMP, and they were doing a project together with Navistar in order to electrify the first two chassis for UPS. And so that's how the involvement, or that three-party, relationship started. And then after a while, when Navistar were going through some of their right-sizing, about 10 years ago, AMP decided to buy Workhorse and basically then became an OEM, got an established factory with some IP and a workforce, and continued to build those electric products for UPS, deploying around 350 of those vehicles into that fleet, as well as several others, Ryder being one of those. And that's how I got to know the company, bringing them into Ryder's fold there for WB Mason. And then kind of went silent for a few years as they were what I kind of put as reinventing the step van. And that's the new product that we have today, the C1000, that we just announced the start of production in our quarterly earnings announcements yesterday. And so we produced the first vehicles out of that factory with that new configuration. It's really, really exciting.
That's really cool. And, you know, it's always, it's interesting when we get into these conversations with, you know, on this podcast, oftentimes our paths meet different ways. Yeah, I was actually at Navistar, and when the Workhorse acquisition occurred, I was on part of a little team that was trying to figure out, you know, what can Navistar learn from Workhorse, Navistar, and where were we going to go with things? It was also about the time we were working on the E-Star. You remember the Navistar East? Yeah. You know, now that we're kind of where we are now, every once in a while, I think back to that E-Star, and maybe it was ahead of its time a little bit. I mean, you remember that? And how would that fit in today's world of all this product that's coming so fast?
Well, it's so funny that you mentioned that. And yeah, timing is everything, right? And there's been a number of companies in this EV space that have been too early. You know, timing is like right now. And if you had the right ideas and all the right intentions, 5 or 10 years earlier, it just didn't make it. And so there was a lot of products that were shelved, even though they were really well thought out and had the right intent and the right customer segment in mind. And that was certainly one of those very innovative, ahead of its time products.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that battery development and also power electronics and some of those things might have been the reason it was a little, too early. So right now, boy, this space, this C1000 space is pretty crowded, right, Chris? I mean, we've got the you know, we've got some, I guess I would put Workhorse in a traditional manufacturer that kind of knows the, you know, e-commerce and urban, you know, small truck delivery really well. And we've got some new players coming to the marketplace and so forth. So how do you fit into all that? And where do you see it? Where do you see it heading? I mean, e-commerce is growing. And at the same time, you know, we're turning over to a whole new kind of truck, right?
I think so. And the idea of a purpose-built vehicle is very interesting and appealing to the marketplace. Everybody wants hyper-customization for their specific needs. And a lot of it goes into making everything more efficient, right? So for a 200 stop a day kind of an application, shaving 10, 20, 30 seconds off every single stop because of certain customization features does have an ROI. We're seeing that with the interest from the customers that are seeing these little specifics, right? So lowering the floors, having sliding doors, you know, for those kinds of applications, which, you know, that's not like a new thing, but from a purpose-built perspective, it is. And then you go into, you know, this last mile segment, which you mentioned kind of crowded. You have, you know, a lot of companies that are coming into the space with kind of built from the ground up architecture. And, you know, actually most of them are in the 600 cubic feet of cargo capacity and less, whereas our entry point is this 1,000 cubic feet, which, you know, in today's last mile delivery world, that has gotten so much more dense. They're driving less miles. They're delivering more packages because they're stopping at every fifth house and instead of every 10th house or whatever the number is, but it's becoming more dense. And so they're realizing that the 600 and less cubic feet vehicle is not what they need. They need the 1,000 cubic foot vehicle. And I think that certain companies, you know, established companies have realized that long ago, which is why they're driving around in 1,000 cubic feet vehicles today. So I think that we still have a pretty significant headway here against the competition in that 1,000 cube space.
Yeah, so a lot of space, you know, in the truck with the C1000. Quite interesting. So let's talk about the variation in this segment a bit more. So, you know, you mentioned shelves or sliding doors. You know, I'm sure like walking through the compartment. I mean, why? And you mentioned already on this podcast, you've mentioned linen, bakery. We've talked about packages. So can you sort of like paint a picture for you know, and maybe there's no common or what are some of the big chunks of the market and what kind of truck changes do each of those applications bring with them? Just give us some insight there.
Yeah. So great question. And much of it can be configured into an existing product like the C1000 as it exists today, with different kinds of shelving or racking systems, or hangers and various things. But then you go into the linen industry as an example, and they want a wider bodied vehicle in comparison to the 88 inch exterior width that our vehicle is today, which is customized for last mile package delivery. And the reason why they want a wider vehicle is because of the bins that they use. That is kind of the standard across the industry. So when they go pick up and drop off, they have these particularly, you know, sized bins, and they need to be able to push one set against the left wall and one set against the right wall and still have space in between to roll one back and forth. And so those are the kinds of changes that are a little bit more challenging that will require a bit of a different platform that we're working towards. Those are kind of the more complex changes that need to take place in order to like do be these specific fit vehicles for various industries.
So it's just not the size, it's the width, the height, the depth, the aisles you're talking about, and on and on. What about doors? Do rear doors, side doors, how do doors all fit? Because, you know, I'm sure there's some people out there that a truck's a truck's a truck, you know, and it's really not the case at all.
Right, exactly. And that's actually why you saw the announcement yesterday that we have partnered with EAVX, which is a division of JB Poindexter & Company, to help us create a broader set of products specifically within that body category in order to basically use our existing skateboard to appeal to a broader audience, increase our volumes, get to scale. And we see that relationship is going to be really fruitful over the next couple of years in helping us scale.
So you see, you'll be building the C1000 complete, and then you'll also probably be building what we used to call a cabin chassis for different body configurations that'll be put on by somebody else. Is that kind of the strategy?
Yeah, there's a number of different options that we can go forward with, but yeah, we're right now exploring these parallel paths that we can basically create as broad of a set of products, using as little variation as possible within our core competency of building those drivetrains and electric chassis.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for that. I mean, I think the linen example you brought up is really key, right? So if they don't get a wider one, they need twice as many trucks because they can only put one row of bins down through it. That's not going to happen, right? So right. I think oftentimes we just say, well, we'll build it and the customer will buy it. And, you know, if it's not perfect, no big deal. Well, in that case, it's, you know, half. So tell us a little bit, let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about what makes a fleet an early adopter. I mean, why do some, you know, we've got Run on Less Electric that we're doing this year. And, you know, Workhorse, thanks for being a sponsor and a participant of the run, Chris. And the truck that will be in the run is a Chicago bakery truck. Why is that fleet, you know, on the, you know, what many would call the bleeding edge of this and not waiting to see it kind of happen? Maybe talk about that particular fleet and then fleets like that in general. Why are they leaning in?
Yeah, I particularly like that account because they've been our first customer. They took our first truck, many years ago, and now, I don't know, it's 5 or 6 years ago, the first electrified chassis there, and just have been running those five trucks that they have ever since, are still running them. They were on the bleeding edge. Absolutely. We've been there, to take care of them and to be with them. And I think that they value that partnership that we've created with them, which is why they're continuing to want to be, you know, the first to receive these new vehicles. And why? I think that it takes a particular kind of individual that just likes change, that wants to push their organization into interesting challenges and be on that leading edge. Some people are reluctant to be there because you do get, you know, scars and whips and other things. Yeah. I keep referring to my chin having been cut open a few times in my career because I keep pushing the envelope everywhere that I go, and I think that's a personality type.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that there's it's like in anything. If we know a change is coming, like the old "Who moved my cheese?" So if we know it's coming and we can prepare for it, a lot of companies and maybe individuals too, they think that way, right? They don't want to be blindsided with a big change, so they're thinking about it. But there's a group of people that sit on the sidelines. Sometimes at NACFI we call them sort of technology spectators. They're really into it. They bought a ticket. They're at the truck shows. They're on the webinars. They're getting involved, but they're not jumping in and being a player in the game. And for those that do, I think you're hit on exactly the thing. I mean, there's a culture at that company, oftentimes, sometimes with the CEO or some of the leadership team, where they want to be an innovator, and so they tend to be the earliest of adopters and willing to jump in and go about it. And really, that's what we're trying. You know, a lot of those run on less electric participants. All 13 of them are kind of that way. So, what else are you like learning from some of these early deployments? You know, I mean, I'm sure you've locked in the basic design of the C1000, but you can always look for future changes and even some modifications that can be made and additional features to be added. But how do you view some of these early adopting fleets and what you can learn and use?
Yeah, so a lot of questions come out around the product and what you learn about the product. But I think that I take a little bit of a broader approach and think about the engagement, the overall engagement in every step of the way of this customer journey, all the way from talking about a vehicle and its capabilities and then installing charging infrastructure and then receiving the vehicle and going through maintenance events and going through eventually a disposal event. And, you know, this entire life cycle that the customer goes through with that vehicle has to be supported by the OEM. And I think that there's innovation coming to the product, there is innovation in the way that the product is going to be supported and serviced. And so moving from a very reactive service model to a proactive service model is now a possibility. We have way more insights into the vehicle remotely than we ever have before. And even though, you know, telematics has been on, you know, internal combustion product for a very, very long time, figuring out how to use that to create proactive products has been slow to market. Everybody talks about the panacea around predictive maintenance, but I think that that's the end goal. And what are all the different monetizable steps in between that add significant value to the customer? And that's where I feel like things have been left off a little bit. And that's where I want to make a significant difference here at Workhorse.
Yeah, I think you're on to something. And I, you know, whether we've redesigned the whole truck or not, the powertrain, you know, the kind of the key big components are new, and subsystems are new. And so I do think that a lot of people are taking advantage of that and creating a data collection information system that's going to really help us as we go to diagnose and move these forwards. And actually, I think, you know, many people say that the industry is not ready for all of the technicians and electronics and electrical changes that are coming, high voltage, all this stuff. But on the other hand, these have been designed and built with that in mind, and maybe it won't be as difficult. What are you most, when you think maybe, and maybe we got to start wrapping this up a little, Chris, time always flies, but as you look back, you put us out in like 5, maybe 10 years, and you look back and what are some things with these electric trucks compared to their diesel and gasoline counterparts before? What are some things that we're going to go, man, maybe we'll look at both, Chris. Maybe first, what are the things that are better than you thought that maybe the rest of the industry isn't really thinking about them? I mean, we know the obvious ones, right? They don't burn fuel. They don't have exhaust. But you know, we talk about noise and maybe maintenance, but what's a couple of things that you think we'll look back on and say, man, that was a lot better, or something that went really well? And then maybe what are some things that we might be concerns that we should be thinking about now and deal with? So the good and the bad.
Right. Good question. I constantly think about the lack of electricians in the industry. Right now, if you want to install charging infrastructure, it's becoming harder and harder and more expensive because there's just not enough boots on the ground to do the electrical work. And there is a massive spike coming. And so, you know, you think about trade schools, and it goes back, but both for charging infrastructure as well as repair of the vehicle. I think Tesla has done a pretty interesting job at creating partnerships with trade schools and community colleges and you know, various organizations like that, in order to have, you know, young technicians that get the right kind of training, that don't have perhaps internal combustion experience in the past at all, right? Because it to a certain extent is not applicable.
Yep.
And frankly, they're in high demand, so it becomes more expensive. So, you know, the focus needs to be from an industry perspective of starting to create more trade school relationships and getting more certified electricians out there, because one of the big things that's going to hold up the progress is the delays in installing charging infrastructure. And I think that that's a bigger hurdle to get past than the, I guess some believe that there's not a, like, enough electricity being generated in the grid. And, you know, we already see, you know, blackouts, brownouts, you know, whatever in various states. And then how do you expect us to throw this new electrical load on top?
Yeah.
I think that the electrician shortage is going to become a glaring issue going forward.
Yeah, I think that's, so there's basically a, you know, a real opportunity and a challenge there. I think you're really onto something. I mean, I think that, you know, the batteries have come a long way. The trucks are coming. The power will be the power. I think they'll respond. It's the charging infrastructure. It's very well said. So, hey, I got to wrap it up there, Chris. I mean, this has really been fun and insightful, and I appreciate you having joined us.
Hey, I always enjoy our conversations, Mike. Anytime. Thank you.
Freight Efficiency with NACFI's Mike Rosenfrantz.